Moving Iron Podcast is proud to be part of the Global Ag Network. The network is live, so check out globalagnetwork.com for more details and updates. Now on to the show.
Moving Iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Moving Iron time and time again.
Hello and welcome to Moving Iron Podcast number 140. Today my guest is Tanner Emke of Cobank's Knowledge Exchange. And Tanner is a pretty regular guest here on the Moving Iron Podcast, and I'm thankful that he's on here. He's the kind of one of my go-to economists when I get in there, and he's also from the great state of Kansas, so you can't beat that to stick. So, Tanner, how you been, bud?
That's right. I'm doing great. Good to be back.
Yeah, I'm glad to have you, man. So, man, there's a whirlwind of stuff going since the last time we talked. About 2 months ago or so, we talked, we chatted a little bit about stuff, and, you know, at that time, the China thing was kind of up in the air. Not that it's not now, but at least it can't get any worse than what it is. Now, we can't really tariff anything else. We've kind of hit the max limit on tariffs over there. But something else started to happen since then, and that is the kind of rise of this weather market that we're seeing, and a lot of positive turn here in crop prices. But along with all that positivity in the commodity marketplace, there's a whirlwind of negativity surrounding all that stuff. So I want to get your opinion on what you see happening now compared to what you saw the first half of the year, and if things kind of stay this path that we're seeing right now going through the end of 2019. What's your opinion of what's going to happen?
Well, if you go back to the start of the year, we were fighting trade wars on multiple fronts. We were still, USMCA was still up in the air. We had the trade war with China was getting further entrenched. We had steel and aluminum tariffs on everybody, including our allies, Canada, Mexico, Europe. China, I mean, everybody got steel and aluminum tariffs, and of course the retaliatory tariffs, those were all in place. But we had some movement on the negotiation with South Korea, and it appeared as though perhaps we might have some movement on Japan. And since then, things have gotten better. They did get better for a moment there. We had lifted the steel and aluminum tariffs on Canada and Mexico. And this was precisely the right move in the right direction. Now, the Canadians and the Mexicans were saying, we're not going to pass USMCA until you lift the tariffs. And we were saying to them, no, you have to pass USMCA first, and then we'll lift the tariffs. And so we had that just here recently. The tariffs were lifted on Canada and Mexico. And it appeared as though we were gaining some really strong momentum in finally passing USMCA, and we would have had that under our belt. You know, we would have had the negotiation with South Korea, of course, that one knocked out. We would have had USMCA hopefully knocked out later this year. We would have been waiting on the Canadians to pass through their parliament, Mexicans likewise, and in the United States, we were still wondering if perhaps the Democrats might hold it up in the House. But the momentum, though, was moving in the right direction. And then yesterday, on Thursday, May 30th, I'm not sure when you're playing the podcast here, but we just took another 5 steps back. And Trump announced that on June 10th, he's going to raise tariffs to 5% on everything from Mexico. It doesn't matter what the product is. Every single import from Mexico into the United States is going to have a 5% tariff. And if they don't resolve the issue of migrants crossing the border over into the United States, we're going to continue raising tariffs on Mexico for every single month, I believe, until they reach 25% by October 1st. So that's where we're at right now. With USMCA. A lot of people are concerned that now with tariffs again being slapped on Mexico, we can kiss that idea goodbye. That we have made progress, but that progress is no more. And what will happen in fact, or what the concern is rather, is that the Mexicans will retaliate with even more tariffs than they had before. Now, this is going to be a huge problem, especially for U.S. pork. That's our major export destination. 40% of all the hams we produce in this country go down to Mexico. And they're our number one market right now outside of because China has dropped off so much. So now we're picking a fight again with our number one agricultural export destination, which is Mexico. That's going to, that will likely result in a more complex supply chain, more difficulty in us moving products down to Mexico, our agricultural products. And so the situation has only gotten worse in that regard. Now take a look at China. It appeared as though we were going to have progress when back earlier this year there was a deadline on March 1st. Well, we moved past that deadline, and it appeared at that time that Trump was happy with the progress, and he says, well, we're just going to move the deadline back. Well, we moved the deadline back, we passed it again, and now no progress with China. In fact, it appears as though both sides, the U.S. and China, are becoming more and more entrenched, with there really being no serious movement in resolution to the trade war with China. In fact, the Chinese appear to be targeting the precious metals or the rare metals that the U.S. imports for our semiconductors. And, you know, things for iPhones, all that kind of stuff. That's important because when we laid tariffs on all these imports from China, that was the only thing we didn't put a tariff on, were these rare earth metals. Well, now China knows that this is very important to us, because 90% of those rare earth metals come from China that we import. And so now they're threatening to use this somehow as leverage against the United States. So take this as a sign that things are not moving in the right direction, Casey. So things are moving backwards with China. Things are moving backwards with USMCA. So the momentum has gone absolutely in the wrong direction. So where did we start from at the beginning of the year? Well, it's not a great position to start from. But as the year went on, it appeared as though we were making progress. Now all that progress is gone, and it appears as though we are now heading into further and further entrenchment on both of those trade fronts. Then you go take a look at what else are we fighting. We've got potentially a trade war that we're going to increase with the Europeans. If we're going to increase tariffs on their automotives and airplanes and things like that, they're probably going to respond in turn with retaliatory tariffs on the United States, specifically in agriculture. So it appears as though that our situation has gotten worse, and there's really no sign that things are going to change anytime soon. So by and large, I wish I could have great news for you, Casey, but there's on the trade front, this has really gone in entirely the wrong direction.
Okay, so last time we were on, you talked quite extensively about the loss of market share that we have around the world with these countries that we're having trade wars with that have opened up new trade routes with other countries. So talk about that a little bit and where you see that going.
Well, as long as we remain entrenched in this trade war, the Chinese are going to continue to source as much soybeans as they can from South America and replace soybeans with other oil seeds like sunflowers, rapeseed, things like that, that they can pull from other countries out away from the United States. Wheat, they can pull that from other locations. It's a globally traded crop. They can source wheat, a lot more wheat out of Russia, perhaps, or other exporting regions, Europe. Corn, same thing there. They've got a lot of corn sitting in inventory that they can rely on. Same thing with wheat. The Chinese have a huge amount of wheat in reserves that they can pull from. They're still sitting on reserves of cotton. So really the major commodities, corn, wheat, soybeans, and cotton, China is in a position where they can replace the United States for the most part. Now, we would perhaps backfill into some other markets, because remember, every bushel of soybeans that Brazil sends to China, they're not going to be sending to, say, Thailand or Indonesia or something like, or some other country like that. And so then we could backfill potentially some of those other markets. But the problem is the Brazilians are expanding acreage. They've got a very weak currency right now. Brazilian farmers are making a lot of money on corn and soybeans. They're making more money on cotton. And so they are expanding acreage across all the commodities. And once those acres come into production, they don't come out. The Brazilians aren't going to say, okay, you know what, it's all good, all's fair. We're just going to go back to the acreage we had before, and the American, you Americans, you can have your markets back over in China. It doesn't work like that. Once those acres are in production, they stay in production. Once those trade routes have been formalized and those relationships have been formalized and the Brazilians and the Chinese become more comfortable trading throughout the year, we lose market share just because those trade routes have now become more, I keep using the word entrenched, but that's kind of what happens. It's hard to undo those relationships that have become more commonplace now outside of the U.S. So once these trade routes have been moved away from the United States, it's really hard to get them back, and it could take a very long time to win back this market share. That's mostly, you know, we're looking at China and Brazil. China's also increasing their relationships with other countries like Russia. They can pull oil seeds out of Russia. Right now they've got a tariff on canola coming out of Canada because Canada has sided with the United States on this disagreement over Huawei, and the Huawei executive that is currently being in custody in Canada. So that's been one wrinkle in all of this. But still, though, China is able to source commodities from around the globe, mostly by bypassing the United States. Now, there's some concern that with the problem with African swine fever, that the Chinese will be forced to import more pork because African swine fever has really purged their sow inventory. And all their millions of hogs have died over there. And so the thought is that the United States could pick up a lot of that business. Well, we have, but they're going to try to go outside of the United States for that business, first of all. They're going to go to other sources, like, again, Brazil with Brazilian chicken. They're going to try to replace a lot of that pork with other alternative proteins outside of the United States. So, again, we're missing out on increasing our market share. So the longer this trade war persists, the more market share we lose long term. And to try to win that market share back, there's only one way you can win it back, is with lower export prices and superior service. And that has to be done over time. Right now, we're not going to get there as long as we have this trade war going. So, yeah, we're going to continue to lose market share. Right now, the Mexicans are looking elsewhere for grain. They're going to be looking at pulling more corn and wheat out of Argentina. The effects are multi-fronts, where we start eroding our market share. And this is a really painful thing to see happen, especially in the times that we're in right now, with so much uncertainty in the planting season.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so that's a good segue into what my next question was then. So, okay, so we got all this information that's coming out right now on, you know, where record lows. I have a report someplace here on my desk, but it's something like 58%. Is where we're at on planting progress goes, it's compared to where it should be, something like 90-some percent this time of the year for corn. It's huge, right? It's epic. We're 2 weeks away from hitting some critical soybean dates in certain areas, and those same areas haven't turned a wheel yet to plant any corn, so probably going to have a hard time getting some soybeans planted of any kind of magnitude, but... You know, we can plant a lot real quick if we get the right conditions, but in all these areas all these areas that we're sitting at right now, the next 7 days is just rain, and there's nothing changing there. So commodity prices have come up because now, you know, China's kind of out of the mix with that, with how kind of controlling the marketplace, because again, it can't get any worse than what it is. So now they're focusing on the weather. Now we still have to raise a crappie regardless if there's a trade war or not, right? And things are shaping up that we're not going to raise the crop that we thought, even if the stuff that's planted, just simply because the heat units may not be there to get the bushels that we need to have. So we're seeing some commodity price rise. But again, we're seeing, like today, December corn closed somewhere around 443 or something like that, right in that area.
Yeah, close to 443 3/4. That's okay. 62, over almost 63 cents for the entire month, which is amazing.
That's huge. That's an amazing swing. Usually it swings the other way before it swings in the positive that way. But,
right.
You know, so here we're looking at this prevent plant thing is getting to be a bigger deal. Some prevent plant payments may not cover just the simple cash rent that you see out there. And then on top of that, any of this MFP payments for tariffs and those kind of things, the prevent plant stuff, it's up in the air whether it's going to cover it or not and how many payments you're going to get and everything else. So I guess from an economic standpoint, when you look at all the stuff that's going on with the trade stuff, with this the corn crop being planting progress and all the stuff that we see here, how is that going to play into all this?
Problem here, as you've pointed out, we're in unknown territory. I mean, this is record delays in planting. And so there's really no baseline of a year to compare to. Now, I've seen numbers out there comparing drought years and things like that to where we could be on total crop size and what the index stocks number would be. And man, I mean, this is, as you said, you can plant a lot of crop in a pretty short amount of time because farmers today are so much better capitalized than we were decades ago. I mean, we can do a lot in just a few dry days. So back to the forecast, you know, the weather forecasts aren't looking great right now. A little bit drier. But still though, I mean, can we get the crop planted within 2 weeks? That's not looking likely. I mean, we're going to see, there's still a lot of, ponded fields out there, more wet weather, in a lot of areas. And so the impact here would be twofold. One, fewer acres. Two, shorter growing season. So we're talking about, in theory, yields below trend line, because as you mentioned, we're not going to get the heat units on it. And then just an overall, all the prevent plant acres. Now, where is that going to end up? I've seen estimates anywhere from 5 million acres of corn that go into prevent plant up to 15 million. That's a huge, huge, spread. I mean, if you're going to take out, say, on the worst case scenario, 15 million acres of corn, man, you're down below 80 million acres. That would be insane to see so few acres. And I've already heard of end users booking Brazilian corn to barge up into the Mississippi for later in the year because of the concern of what may happen, that we just don't have a corn crop or just don't have enough corn to go around. Now, I mean, that would be a very extreme situation. But again, we don't really have a baseline to go off of here other than looking at another extreme weather event, 2012. It was the opposite. It was extremely dry. And what happened? We had a crop failure. And that's when the price of corn went past $7. Are we going to be in that scenario this year? It is way too far in advance. We're way too early in the year to really talk about that because there's so much more growing season yet to go. We may have a delayed frost. The first frost of the season may not come until much later in the year. And so you end up getting enough growing season to get a good yield. Or with prices as high as they are, farmers get innovative and they get some short season corn. And they still go after it, and they plant that crop outside of the planting date for their insurance. There's that possibility. So it's really hard to talk around these numbers when there's so many unknowns. We're not going to know about acreage, really, until we get our prospective plantings number from USDA at the end of June. And that'll be the first objective data. And so we've got a few weeks to go yet before we start seeing what that looks like. But in theory, though, if you want to just take the prevent plant estimates as a baseline of the volatility we could see for the year ahead, or for the season, growing season ahead, 5 million acres of prevent plant versus 15, there's a lot of unknowns what that says to me. And that means the market, in the absence of information, can and will be quite volatile. And that's about the only thing we can say at this point. But we could probably assume planted acreage will be down, and we could safely assume, I think, that if we don't get the growing season that if we just have a normal growing season in a shortened time frame because of the late planting, then we could probably assume that overall yields will be slightly down. But to put any numbers on it at this point is really early. I wouldn't want to venture a guess, obviously, at this point.
So what do you think if here we are, today's date is May 31st, and we go through the summer, and we start running into more of this, same song, kind of the same dance, same thing that we've been doing here back and forth. What kind of effect is that going to have on rural America as far as economically, right? If there is a, we kind of roll in the same thing with the soybeans. I mean, it's way too early to start talking about the soybean, this, that, and another thing. But, you're 2 weeks away from hitting some soybean dates, like I said earlier, and in those same areas, that's 2 weeks away, they haven't planted any corn yet either. So what are the odds of them planting some soybeans? You know what I mean? There's a lot of stuff that can change that, but
yeah, I mean, it depends. I've heard of up in North Dakota, for instance, farmers who may not be able to plant beans may go to spring wheat. So we may pick up some wheat acres. Or if you can't get corn in, perhaps you can go to, perhaps go to soybeans or go to something like sorghum, which could be planted in June. There's always an alternative. It may not be better, but there's always an alternative. And so, farmers will find a way to get innovative. And I'd say what concerns me really at this point is when you have a lot of farmers who are financially stressed, now add on the uncertainty of this year's growing season and how bizarre it has become with all this rain that we've gotten and the delayed planting. Now add in the extreme uncertainty of the trade situation. Now add in these MFP payments that we don't know about or how they're going to be delivered or who's going to get what that are supposed to be paid out of this other $16 billion in addition to the last $12 billion that Trump paid out. All of this uncertainty, it's got to be causing migraines across the Midwest. I mean, how do you plan for the year when you've got all this uncertainty? It's really hard. In addition to the financial stresses that are already out there. So this is just kind of a huge pileup of uncertainty all at one point. And I don't know if there's ever been a time in history where we've seen this much uncertainty colliding all at once. I mean, it's really causing a lot of problems throughout the grain trade, especially for farmers and ranchers, obviously, but up and down the supply chain. And as I mentioned earlier, there's rumors out there of end users booking Brazilian corn to bring it into the United States. It's everybody who's going to end up paying for it and paying for all this uncertainty. So obviously the impact is not a positive one for the rural economy, and it's not a positive one for the agricultural economy. But I would say the upside here, prices have responded because of all this uncertainty. We've seen just on corn, corn prices are up over 60 cents for the month. No soybeans are up 30 cents. Wheat's up over, like 75 cents. I mean, these are across the board gains that if you're able to get a crop in, this is a nice way to profit. If you can get your crop in, this is a gift. Take it. Take some money off the table if I were a farmer. Standing back further and looking at just the ag economy at large, there are going to be some farmers out there who benefit from this. This is going to be the gift that they needed, or the price run up that they're able to take advantage of. But unfortunately, there is a reason why prices are high, and that's because of the great uncertainty. And there's a lot of farmers who unfortunately aren't going to be able to benefit from it. So it's going to be a mixed bag, probably across the ag economy. But one thing is for certain, all of the uncertainty is not good for business. Markets hate uncertainty. And unfortunately, that's what we have in spades right now.
The market is showing it by this huge swings in volatility that we've seen over the last this week. You know, I mean, up until Wednesday, basically, we'd watch the markets just go up and up and up and up and up. And then they were going such big day-over-day gains, I was starting to kind of get like, all right, there's going to be a – just calm down a little bit here. And sure enough, on Wednesday of this week, we saw almost a 30-cent reversal in the markets, which then it all came back the next day, though, and it was right back to where it was, and then it's fallen off a little bit today because of the stupid Mexico thing.
Right.
But stupid Mexico
thing. Yeah, the volatility
thing
is not going away. It's getting worse.
Yeah, it's getting worse. So with all that being said, what is your – has your outlook changed at all since we talked last time? On how you see 2019 going into 2020?
Well, I'd say, again, going back, there's so many unknowns, but I'd say when you look at all the reason why we had the run-up in prices is because of a lot of negative factors coalescing all at once. And, with weather and trade and those factors right here in this last week with Mexico, that has not been a positive. I would say my outlook has been dimmer, and I wouldn't think that I would be an outlier at all by saying that for all of those of us who follow the ag economy and the grain markets and the commodity markets at large. And I don't think I would be out there by myself by saying that the outlook has become a lot dimmer. In fact, when you look at USDA came out with their trade outlook this week, and the ag trade outlook, and it's their outlook is a lot more pessimistic than it was than at the beginning of the year. And so I just take that as yet another indication that we're moving in the wrong direction. Obviously, some of this can be, is our own doing, so to speak. We caused a lot of these problems just with policy. And when I say we, I mean these are human-invented factors. The weather delays are one thing, but when we're actively destroying our markets abroad, that's not positive, obviously, on commodity prices in the U.S. And when those problems or when those negotiations continue to go in the wrong direction, all you can assume is, well, I guess if we're going to continue status quo, this is going to be a further drag on the ag economy in 2019, and this is precisely coming at the wrong time. When farmers are already dealing with such a stressful financial situation and a stressful planting season, now you add in the trade situation, and this is just an unreal coalescing of events that really just there's no way to look at the positive on this. Now, as we talked about earlier, some people will benefit from higher prices. Some people, if they got a crop, then they're going to benefit. But on the whole, on the macro view for the ag economy, these are three things that just are not a positive for the ag economy. And unfortunately, I think a lot of other people out there that are following what's going on in agricultural finance and things like that in the ag economy, it's probably going to end up being a worse year, even if farmers accept payments from the trade war. With $28 billion now, plan to be paid out to farmers, that's still not going to make up for the losses economically from trade. So, sorry for the bad news, Casey, but really there's not a positive story here yet.
No, you're really not telling anything I didn't already know. I thought maybe you'd tell me I'm wrong, but so you're telling the same story I kind of had in my head there.
There's not a lot to cheer about.
No. Now, in certain areas, if you're in one of those areas where commodity prices, you got a crop in, the commodity price is going to work out for you, and you're gonna benefit from that. It's going to be aces. It's going to be great. Unfortunately, sure. The areas that aren't, that are either on the bubble or not going to raise a crop, it's going to be tough for them. And that, I think that's going to be more than not this year. It's going to be something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of those years where even if you're lucky enough to get a crop in and benefit from good price, from an improved price over the last month, what's going to happen with the trade situation long term? These can be systemic problems that haunt us for many years down the road. So that's the longer term view here, that we're paying a penalty now, and we will probably continue paying a penalty for much longer, unfortunately. It's these things can continue to haunt us for many years down the road.
One other thing I want to talk about before we head out, and that is, I've been watching the cotton market here pretty close over the last 2 or 3 months, and there's volatility starting to creep in that market. You know, you look at Georgia, what's happening out there. It's dry as a bone right now, hot and dry. They're in a bad shape. Talking to some guys down in Texas, having some hard time getting their cotton to come out down there. So, and it's wet, pretty wet across the deep south through the Delta and all that other stuff. So, but cotton's a little bit different when it comes to that, because it's more of an economically driven commodity, just because it's, you know, clothes and the stuff that they use to make it with. It's not really a food. You don't really eat cotton, right? So,
you're going to follow the equities a lot closer.
Right. So every time I turn on any of these business news channels, whether it's Fox Business or MSNBC or whatever it is, or Bloomberg, whatever it is, I hear over and over again how we just missed the recession. Well, I don't know if that you really just miss a recession. I don't know if that's, there's near misses when it comes to that kind of stuff, but the cotton market has been that one kind of staple over the last 3 years for sure that has been a bright spot in agriculture. So when you look at the global economy and how that's going to affect cotton, what's your feel on that?
Well, I'm glad you bring that up. You know, what happens in the global economy has a strong impact on what happens to cotton prices. Because if you just took, for instance, cotton prices versus the value of the U.S. dollar, there's a very, very strong correlation. Cotton is, because it's so tied to the macro economy, it's hypersensitive to the value of the U.S. dollar. And when the value of the dollar is going up, the value of, or the cotton prices typically are going to be going down. Now, there's a lot of many other factors going on influencing prices. But in the macro view, a strong dollar is very bearish on cotton prices. So now add in a slowing U.S. economy. The projections are for the U.S. economy to slow quite a bit from where we started from at the beginning of the year. The last quarterly growth figures for the United States were very strong, over 3% growth, which was amazing. But if you take that apart and look at it, a lot of that was because of inventory buildup, because companies were afraid of the trade war. And so once those inventories run out and we see that economic growth was not going to be so great for the end of the year, through the rest of 2019 anyway, that's going to be bearish, obviously, on cotton prices. Now, take into consideration what's happening in the global economy. The Chinese economy is slowing because of the trade war, and that's going to have impacts around the world. There's concern here that if that a slowdown in the Chinese economy would be somewhat of a contagion around the rest of the global economy, because everybody is, you know, trading with China as well, especially the Europeans. A drag in the Chinese economy could drag down the European economy. At the same time, the Europeans are dealing with Brexit. In October is the final drop-dead date for Brexit. We don't know how that's going to turn out. Is Britain going to be leaving the European Union with no trade agreement? That would be bearish on that economy as well. That would be a drag on their economic growth. It could push them into recession, perhaps. So globally, if we're looking at slowing economic growth and perhaps slowing economic growth here in the United States, what that means then is those two factors combined are going to be a drag on cotton. And right now, there is no shortage of cotton. So you've got two culminating factors here. You've got strong cotton production, and slowing global economy, this is not a good combination, unfortunately, for cotton. They've had a streak of good years, but this may be the year where things turn south on them.
Again, you're supposed to reassure me that I was wrong there, Tanner.
Well, I mean, there's, again, we can't paint everything with such a broad brush. I mean, there are going to be, you know, a lot of people out there who do just fine. If you are a farmer who's hedged, or if you're a farmer who's coming into this situation with no debt, these are the situations where you shine as a manager. Now, you're getting into all this, you know, farm economic talk, and we don't need to go that far. But broadly speaking, for the agricultural economy, you know, cotton prices have been in continual decline now for many months. And if the outlook for the U.S. economy and the weaker outlook for the world economy are any indication, it looks like that would be a drag on cotton prices as well.
Awesome. Well, hey, you're kind of reassuring me here what I thought was kind of happening, what was coming down the pike, just based on what I'd seen in conversations that I've had with other folks here. So, Tanner, it's always awesome to have you on the podcast. Any last thoughts you want to throw out there before we shut it down?
Oh, I'm sorry. Say that again, Casey.
It's always a pleasure to have you on the podcast, man. So, if there's any last thoughts you want to throw out before we shut it down?
Oh, well, I would say, I wish I tried to end on a positive note, but of course I can't find one right now.
Notice.
I would say that, you know, when you always look at the long-term history of any economy or any market, you always got to remind yourself of one fact. Good times don't last, but neither do bad times.
Right. That's a good point.
Everything's a cycle, and we'll eventually, this will all cycle out. This is going to be a bad memory.
Yep. No, that's very true. Very true. All right, Tanner, well, if folks want to reach out to you and ask you questions or pick your brain or something like that, how would they do that?
They can go to the CoBank website. It's cobank.com, or they can feel free to send me an email, thmke@cobank.com.
Right on, man. Well, Tanner, it's good to talk to you again, and take care of yourself, and I will see you for sure in Nashville at the Moving Iron Summit there, but if I don't talk to you before that.
Sure thing, Casey, anytime.
All right, bud, thanks. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Moving Iron Podcast, now part of the Global Ag Network. If you'd like to continue any of these conversations, you can hit me up on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at Moving Iron LLC. You can also send me an email at MovingIronPodcast@MovingIronPodcast.com. You can also visit the Moving Iron Podcast YouTube channel and watch Market Roundup with Chip Nellinger, Sean Hackett, and Angie Setzer. Also, Tax News with Glenn Birnbaum. Please visit MovingIronLLC.com. Here you can find information, details, and updates for the 2019 Moving Iron Summit in Nashville, Tennessee. If you'd like to support the podcast, you can leave a review and subscribe at iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, SoundCloud, and GlobalAgNetwork.com. So until next time, let's go move some iron. This is Casey Seymour. Out.
Moving iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Moving iron time and time again. Through the years you'll find us here. Moving iron.